Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Let me show you out back, and then I'll get out of your hair.
The stars are insane out here.
I should have brought the telescope.
What do you need a telescope in the city for? Unless you're like a peeping Tom or something.
Camera.
Get through the night. We leave first thing in the morning.
What's going on?
I don't know.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 338, the Really Awful Movies Podcast. The Rental from 2020. I was thinking a little bit about my antipathy towards social media horrors. And I was thinking, when you look at the likes of, let's say, iMurders or Unfriended or Friend Request and that, it seems to me they're exploiting or tapping into the wrong aspect of social media that one should fear. And that is the socializing aspect and the bullying. It's not so... It's not as impactful as what I think is more sinister, what Glenn Greenwald called the conformity that comes from surveillance. And with the proliferation and ubiquity of smartphones, it's just become that much easier to monitor other people's business and to do it in a manner that doesn't require immense technical proficiency of the type of thing you would see in maybe the Communist Museum or Cold War espionage technology. The Rental is a movie that exploits that very thing and taps the surveillance style Peeping Tom. I mean, there's a movie that goes back to 1960, but it's kind of a Peeping Tom surveillance movie that is based around a creeper and installing these devices in a home. And it's interesting, as I was thinking, I had just seen a movie franchise that I quite enjoyed that was so under the radar, but which had a very, very memorable antagonist. And it was cut from this very same cloth. It was called 13 Cameras. And if I'm not mistaken, that one spawned three franchise entries, possibly. But it's funny because a surveillance type movie, depending on who you ask, could be almost a victimless crime to the extent of whether you know about it or not. When you look at other types of horror movies, I mean, clearly there's victims throughout, but I mean, if you're none the wiser, I mean, who's to say really how impactful it would really be and how deleterious it would be? Because really, when you think about it, there are some people who are, myself not included, but who are so sex positive they wouldn't even mind if their privacy was thusly violated. And maybe on the exhibitionist side of things, they wouldn't even care particularly. There's a Gay Talese hosted a documentary called Voyeur that I've referenced several times on the podcast here that focuses on a, I think somewhere a since raised, thankfully, no longer in operation motel. I believe it was somewhere near Colorado or somewhere in the southwestern U.S. in which the proprietor was spying on all the denizens of the motor lodge. And yes, a voyeur, I mean, that was particularly impactful because you have people who are violated over the course of dozens and dozens of years. And I think the person spoke under the enough time had passed since, or maybe they were unable to prosecute it, or maybe to be able to provide proof, as the police had, as I said, been raised. But Surveillance Horrors is quite interesting, and The Rental falls into that category. What inspired this viewing of this Dave Franco directed vehicle was a documentary whose name escapes me, actually, but actually on the sort of the sinister and evil side of Airbnbs, taken from the perspective both of the hosts but also the guests, and all these horror stories. There was one in West London of a guy who rented quite a posh house, I guess it should be said, but the residents proceeded to throw a real throwdown, and invited, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 and 150 people, causing, I think, £10,000, or about $17,000 US, just to the floor itself, not to mention all the other valuables that were damaged. So the Rental, Dave Franco's The Rental, is Franco's directorial debut. And of course, he was also in Disaster Artist. Somewhat forgettable but entertaining nonetheless take on how Tommy Wiseau's The Room came to fruition. But in his directorial debut, he puts in his wife as the star, and that's Alison Brie. And our listeners will probably know her from two shows I quite liked but never really fully got behind, and that was the Childish Gambino and Chevy Chase Community, which was quite a charming curiosity of a show, and quite quirky, but I just couldn't sink my teeth into it. And she was the sort of waspy student at the college there, but also Mad Men, and she played one of the marketing creatives, stuck up misses. It's kind of funny, like, she takes on these waspy roles despite being Jewish, but she definitely has that kind of air of Connecticut blue-bloodedness that really lends itself to roles like this. And similarly, in this film, she plays more of like the sober voice among these four friends, although that changes later, but she's more the prudish one. Now, as a backdrop, you have these four principals, two of whom are brothers, and one of them works with his younger sibling's fiance, and this is a very interesting and quite, subtly described sibling rivalry between them that Franco sets up, which is quite good. And one of the siblings, played by Jeremy Allen White, who plays Lip in the, I would say, inferior but not without its merits, American version of Shameless. And he's kind of the no good Nick, younger brother who's got problems with the law, and his older brother is the one who's like a dot-com entrepreneurial startup whiz-bang guy who's extremely successful and living in San Francisco and Silicon Valley and being one of these dynamic business people. So again, these the sibling rivalry conceit goes back to antiquity, and with whether it be Romulus and Remus or Jacob and Esau or hell, maybe the Franco brothers themselves, James and Dave, I'm not sure to the extent of their relationship, but that dynamic is put into place right from the get-go as you are introduced to the principals, who decide to get away for a weekend and decide to rent this rather sprawling, what looks to be central, maybe Northern California mansion overlooking this rocky crag, and with a perfect ocean view. And they decide, I mean, it's a little probably out of their price range, but that they really need a vacation. I mean, I can relate, right? I mean, I've booked a trip to New York for August, and time will tell whether the vaccine rollout in Ontario proceeds as planned, and I will fall into the group that's deemed, able to get the J&J or the AstraZeneca or whatever the hell vaccine is available. I don't give a shit at this point, but we'll see. But these people are wanting to get away from it all, and there's really quite really well-developed dynamic amongst all these people. And this comes to a head when they get to the place. And the ne'er-do-well brother decides to bring along the family pet, even though it's explicitly prohibited and verboten as per the Airbnb-style ad for this house. But again, this guy says, okay, we'll hide him in the car. And that sort of is a foreshadowing of the kind of, well, I mean, this is a horror movie anyway. And you know what's going to happen when someone goes to an out-of-the-way house or abode of any sort in the woods. Now, when they get there, the caretaker is a rather dodgy character who makes thinly veiled Islamophobic anti-Arab remarks to Mina Mohammadi, I believe is her surname, and she's the girlfriend of the shameless actor there, and she picks up on his racism and actually takes him to task about it, because during the booking process, apparently she was passed over in favor of her soon-to-be brother-in-law, so who's a white guy, and there's a lot of awkward banter, and you get this scenario set up where you think, okay, Dave Franco has invested us in all these people, and they've got this caretaker who says his brother owns the place, but who is some sort of reactionary redneck type fellow, and this means that potentially the rental could be going and in a particular direction. But as I said at the outset of this podcast, it's really the surveillance motif that really gets this thing started, not to mention the extremely, tense and acrimonious sibling rivalry. That's something that's been fascinating to me as someone without siblings, but and most of the friends I have, they're so diametrically different from their siblings that it's quite an interesting literature, I'm sure, to delve into. But as Franco sets up these two distinct, different, completely different personalities, one of whom is ran into trouble with the law and beat someone outside his fraternity, and the other one who's like the good son. And so I guess the good versus the prodigal son. He's the business whiz-bang .com startup guy who's got everything going for him, is taller, better looking, all that kind of good stuff. And their relationship really comes to a head when three members of the foursome, the Alison Brie character excepted, decide on their first night to really get blottoed and get to take a bunch of MDMA and really cut loose on their first night in this very spacious and very elegant home. And this results in two members of the party passing out, and the brother and Mina, the Arab character, just being left in the hot tub to their own devices. And a dynamic of employer-employee protocol, breach of protocol and violation of, all manner of decency, really, if you're going to cheat on cheat with your brother's fiance. But all sorts of decorum are violated here, and in a hot tub, a makeout session followed by subsequent shower, dalliance. And this sets into motion a lot of tension and awkwardness as the rest of the weekend they play the gambit of having had too much to drink and stay in order that they can maybe hash out what happened the night before and how they should proceed and how they should, well, obviously not tell the significant others, and maybe let sleeping dogs lie and just carry on with their lives for the rest of their vacation and just, well, as the one brother, the cuckolded one, I guess you could say, and the Alison Brie character go out on a hike, more is revealed about the cheating nature in an inadvertent, I guess, admission by the brother. So that fuels even further tension that's exacerbated and amplified by one of the characters, Mina, the Arabic woman, discovering, of all things, a little blinking red light in both shower stalls of this sprawling mansion. Again, it's probably a four-bathroom home. It's just incredibly spacious. And this really sets them off, because not only do they realize that they're being violated and they're being spied on, but that their dalliance and their cheating is potentially going to be used as a blackmail chip by, of all people, and someone the audience would expect would be the kind of redneck, semi-bigoted, old-school caretaker type fellow. Now, Dave Franco is smarter than the average bear by the looks of it, and has chosen to turn this kind of conceit on its ear. So, without divulging too much, where the rental takes you is somewhere that you really, really don't anticipate. Astute viewers, I think, or savvy viewers, will perhaps take note that the potential insertion of a red herring, but even if there were no antagonists breaking up the genial, or at least at first, dynamic between this foursome, it wouldn't really matter, because this would work as almost like a kitchen sink drama. This would work without any of the horror elements, without any of the moodiness, the stark soundtrack, the remote kind of somewhat creepy sprawling home. So even without the horrific elements, this I think would work very well on its own. And just by virtue of the fact that sibling adultery or dalliances and cheating is maybe not something you see maybe too often, certainly not in the confines of a horror movie. So with some of my recent viewing, I've delved into also movies in which protocol and propriety and social convention has been upended and potentially violated, and that would be the film called The Invitation. But this one has some things that are similar, because really when the revelation about the one brother's previous dalliances comes to light, the Alison Brie character is really tight-lipped and rendered a distance from the rest of the group, and the interconnection between them is something. I mean, I said to my wife here that I almost anticipated the other brother potentially cheating as well in a kind of weird swinger type wife swap situation, but that didn't materialize, thankfully. And thankfully Franco had the good sense to just keep things where this inevitably headed. And again, very subtle workplace dynamic, but there was some discussion at the outset as to how closely the dot-com dude and his underling there, Mina, worked together, and how convivial and wonderful their workplace relationship was before you realize how inappropriate it is when they start complimenting one another in a very inappropriate way, not to mention stripping down to their skivvies in the hot tub. You know, I had really come, I mean, the write-up on this one, this one is available on Prime. I expected extremely little from it, because, again, it divulges very little, discloses very little, and leaves a lot. I was thinking, really, this one is heavily lauded and praised by critics, but there's somewhat of a gulf once again, and I don't know whether I'm just following and toying the critical line, because I try not to be, bias myself towards any particular side on which to come down. But I did notice that there was a slight discrepancy between the IMDb consensus and the critical one, and I thought, geez, I really put that on the back burner, and Dave Franco not really meant particularly much to me one way or the other, so I just figured, okay, I'm just going to let this go and see where it takes me. And again, the surveillance side of things, I think, is the proper way to go about exploiting technology fears. And the fact that, ironically, given that everyone thinks that they're so incredibly unique, that, as Greenwald pointed out, it really does breed a kind of conformity. And right out of the gate, there's a little bit of foreshadowing too, and it's something I mentioned to my wife about how pretty pathetic it was for people who were trying to get away from it all to be looking up their Wi-Fi passwords and trying to source it from the caretaker right away. And I thought, like, Jesus, within an hour or two, they can't escape the strictures and, you know, the mind-forged manacles. Who is that? I always forget the poet I'm quoting there in that one. I think it's could be William Butler Yeats, but yeah, it's just, you're meant to be getting away from it all, and I understand that you're some sort of a Silicon Valley superstar, but really, within your first hour, with this pristine waterfront view and these rocky cliffs and hiking galore, they at one point grab a telescope, and they apparently, you've got incredible vistas and incredible open skies, are the type of thing you don't see in the Bay Area with all the millions of people, with an obscured vantage, but you can see stars and meteors and comets and all this kind of thing, and yet the connection to technology remains one with which they can't an escape from. Technology remains such a directly and strong pull on these people that they can't escape it. But really, the surveillance aspect, in addition to the blackmail plot point, really ratchets up the tension here. Now, the extent to which these people can't escape technology is, I think, common to many of us, not just those of us who work in tech, but I thought the blackmail conceit, or the potential thereof, it's not even known whether they're assuming that that's what's going to happen, but it could be just for the edification, for the antagonist to get his own rocks off and keep it in private, as a lot of these perverts are wont to do, but they just never know. And that takes it into a really different level and adds to the sheer paranoia of it all. And, you know, surveillance and that is something you can see in the Bourne Identity and all sorts of spy capers and all this, but when you pair that kind of idea and the peeping Tom and the leering and the violation of private space, it's something that I think many horrors would be wise to exploit, rather than, I forget which film it was, but there was almost like a Zoom call Skype interface, and it was all done from the point of view of someone interfacing with that medium, and it really does not particularly help the horror space, although that experiment was somewhat unique, but still, it really doesn't do much. And as I said, like, depending on how you feel about your privacy being violated, even if you are okay with it on some level as some sort of uber sex positive type, there are elements of the more conventional stalker and slasher type film that does come to pass toward the denouement. So if you're not totally on board with the drama and the eavesdropping and the leering and the those kinds of violations, then there is a payoff with a few violent scenes toward the end. And without spoiling it, don't want to maybe if we segue into what we've learned, I would say that one of the film's few debits is maybe a antagonist who bore too strong a resemblance to maybe other villains from the bygone or the golden era of horror, namely Michael Myers. And that, I think, it would have been better served to have a more ordinary everyman type, which is what Franco was investing in and with the caretaker, but to have also that element come to bear toward the end, because I thought that was a little bit just a little bit on the corny side, but again, it wasn't nearly enough to detract from the proceedings. And another positive, I would say, not the least of which was the investment in the characters, which is absolutely terrific and almost too much, which is a good problem to have in a way. But I would liken it similar to The Invitation on that front. But I would say just the quietude and the quiescence and just the everyday going about his business by the antagonist as he's setting up the wireless equipment was something that was added a verisimilitude and just a real cinema verite feel to this film. And they really didn't, I mean, you could call it anticlimactic, but again, without spoiling things, it's just how the matter-of-factness of this guy and how he goes about his perverse doings is really, I think, just very adroitly and wonderfully handled by Franco, who obviously has a pretty good sensibility for the genre. You could fault him for maybe a few jump scares that weren't particularly impactful, but he definitely informs this with a little bit of the film noir, what to do with the body aspect of things as well, which really does ratchet up the interest level and tension and the exploiting everything, the acrimony and the at first convivial dynamic that turns south very abruptly. It's just, I mean, I thought it was just incredibly smartly handled, and I really, really appreciated having seen this, because I was debating between this and Terrified, which was a supernatural Argentinian film, as I was going to expand beyond our borders, our being North America, because I found quite a bit of great horror from abroad that I've been both podcasting and maybe even just doing informal write-ups on reallyawfulmovies.com, but stuff from Ireland and stuff from Australia and that. So I was going to do that, and the only thing that made me come down on the side of the rental was the fact that it didn't have subtitles, and I was just feeling a bit tired from having read a little too much and reading too many lengthy reports for my day job. And I just thought, okay, let's put the subtitled film on the back burner, and we can research a little bit about Argentina for an upcoming podcast, and maybe Terrified is something that'll be in the hopper coming up. But the rental, really one of these films that, again, when you have someone who occupies a different type of living space, whether it's like a burnt offerings or a one bedroom or The Shining, there's just so many different ways, so many directions in which you can possibly be pulled, and it's just incredible fodder. You can throw a house in there as well. I mean, the examples are seemingly endless, but I mean, credit to goes to, I mean, Alison Brie is pretty terrific too, and perhaps the most thankless role in this, being the one member of the party who is innocent of all things, and to which a lot of negative things happen, who has to, I guess, really come through and persevere. And she, I mean, is pretty true to her tightwaddy, waspy type mean, but I mean, it comes for her to deliver the goods towards the back end of this film, boy, does she ever. And Jeremy Allen White as well from Shameless, terrific as the underachiever. It just, the whole cast is just great, and the considerations of racism were interesting as well, because there's this tension brought to bear as to whether they should stick to their principles and stand up to this kind of Islamophobic bigot, and but potentially also waste precious time, not to mention money, because they factor in a very lengthy drive to this place as well. So they don't want to be at loggerheads with the caretaker over some remark he made, politically incorrect, off-color remark. Because they really want to, time is at a premium, they really want to enjoy themselves. So that's another nagging tension. So you have the one woman of color who really was probably, if she had her druthers, would have liked to have had a little more support and maybe just walked out. And maybe, I mean, they would have walked out in better shape had they actually considered such a move. But again, you put yourself in that position, how difficult it is to get time away from work and from familial obligations, and finally be able to let go and have your, you know, I mean, this is done right away before the credits roll. You can see what a beautiful homestead this is, and it just would entice pretty much anyone to sign up, particularly if they did get a good deal. So the rental, definitely something that isn't overvalued by anyone, and I think far superior to one bedroom, and in a similar vein to the likes of 13 cameras. Although as that one, I would side as a more conventional style film with an antagonist who's right out in the open and no mystery as to the denouement, and more straightforward. Perhaps a few more scares, I would say, with 13 cameras, but not nearly as clever, not nearly as well handled. But again, in terms of the surveillance, privacy violating, and both of which are efforts that have, both films are ones that have a little bit of violence to them too, that really adds to the tension. But just the leering element, and you got another, you know, positive, throw in the closing credits, which I thought were just really cool. And I don't think I've ever, in 300 plus episodes with Jeff doing the Really Awful Movies podcast, have ever remarked on how impactful or well done closing credits were. And I gotta say, the opening credits were pretty damn good too, because when you have these kinds of movies, whether it's something like Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight, the Polish film I just watched, where it really sets the tone to be driving into the middle of nowhere with a POV car shot weaving through the woods. I mean, it's almost become a staple of this type of film, but it doesn't mean it's any less impactful to set the tone, to separate a city from a country, and separate people from their comfort zones. So star rating, I mean, in terms of sheer surprise by the entertainment value and the fact that it compares favorably, if not a superior effort to 13 cameras, which I gave a 3.5. I'm going to give this 3.75, almost 4 star. I thought it was just incredible. And I would love to see Franco pursue this in the future as well. And he, as I think, is very, very capably able to mix elements of thriller, horror, and drama together. And again, investing so much in the brothers, who, despite their warring acrimony and discord, have a little game that they play where they add bro to everything. Like, take a walk over to the Broshen, bro, and making these sort of bro puns. So yeah, it's funny. Like, you do have a lot of investment in these people who clearly love each other, but have a tense underlying tension. So almost a 4-star effort for me with this one. Glad to be back. Don't forget, for those of you who are more on the horror side of the ledger, check out Death by Umbrella, the 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons on Amazon. And don't forget, a quick plug for our action movie book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, forward by Tarantino favorite and Ozploitation director of Strike of the Panther, Brian Trenchard-Smith, a really good mensch. And we think you'll really enjoy that book too. Patreon, no ads on the program, so if you could pick up either of those books, we'd be thrilled to bits if you could. And we shall talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.